This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And even though it's rainy outside today, it is still a perfect day for reading a good book. So I'm really excited that I have, you know, sometimes you come across a book almost by accident, and I had missed it when it came out a few months ago, and I was so thrilled when I got this book because it is a debut book by a wonderful, wonderful author, Jessica Strasser. Jessica, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Well,
thanks for the kind words, Patty.
Well, Jessica, you know, well, actually, I should start by saying, you know, when I started your book, I got to the second paragraph and I just had to put it down. I just put it down. I walked away from it. I said, okay, because in the second paragraph, we have Violet, who is our main character in the book, and she's sipping a pina colada in Florida. Well, I'm in Florida, and, you know, I think I'm one of these, you've heard of method actors. Well, I'm a method reader. So, you know, if I'm reading Jane Austen, I'm going to have a cup of tea. And, of course, it's very, you know, that can be very dangerous because, you know, I'm reading One Day in the Life of Ivan Denisovich, you know, by Solzhenitsyn. And what do I have to eat? You know, I have to eat stale bread and watered down stew. So, you know, it's a dangerous thing to be a method reader. But in your case, it was sort of fun because I put it down. I had a feeling. I get this sort of tingly feeling when I know I'm going to really like a book. And so since Violet is having a pina colada and she's looking out at the beautiful, and as you describe it, of course, Florida, we always love when people describe Florida, the blue-green southern Florida ocean sparkling before her, the gentle waves breaking, the pelicans diving. Well, I mean, that's my backyard. So, excuse me, I needed that pina colada. I grabbed that pina colada, and I grabbed the book, and I went down to the pool, and I'm like, okay, I knew I was in for a treat, and you did not disappoint me.
Well, thank you. And I live in Ohio, so, you know, it's a bit of escapism to get to write about, you know, one of my favorite places when I can't be there.
Okay, well.
Maybe I should try that method writing and drink the pina colada.
It works, you know. I can't read, you know, like I read Mickey Spillane or something, and then I'm really in trouble. I'm, you know, into the bourbon. As I said, it starts off in Florida. Of course, most of it takes place in two other cities, mm-hmm. Which you capture very beautifully. I don't want to give away the story. I'm getting more and more resentful of those, like the blurbs and everything else in Amazon where they give away too much. I could tell by the first paragraph that this was going to be a suspense. I knew it. I got that feeling by the second or third page. I know I'm in for a treat. And I was so happy. I never read any of that stuff because I didn't want to know. I didn't want to know anything about it. And I just was, it's so thrilling. You know, this, of course, you tell this story and it's a lovely way you reveal the plotting. The plotting is excellent.
It is hard to talk a lot about it beyond the initial premise because the story is told out of order. And so I think that when you do read the reviews, if anybody kind of dives into anything that happens too far beyond chapter one, it is hard not to include a spoiler.
Exactly. Exactly. And I'm just telling people, don't bother. Just get the books, sit down, grab a pina colada. And you know, if you're going to go by the pool, just remember, make sure that you put a lot of lotion on because you won't be able to stop reading. You're just going to, like, you don't want to leave. You just have to keep reading. And I think,
thank you.
You know, it's one of those. Well, first of all, I want to compliment you on something else before I forget, because it's what I really like. You know, of course, my real hero in the line of suspense, the queen of suspense, Mary Higgins Clark, who I love. Mm-hmm. She has always put her thank yous at the beginning of the book. And I noticed that you did that too. And I like that.
I think more and more people are putting them at the end now, because sometimes the people that you thank will tip off readers on, you know, a plot point. If there are heavier, if there's heavy research involved and you're thanking some of your sources, I think that's a reason that a lot of authors have started moving their thank yous to the back.
But I like, you know, Mary has been on the show 3 or 4 times now, and she always says the most important thing to her is just the readers, how grateful she is. And the beauty, of course, of her is that she's 89 years old and she still has that same enthusiasm. And that's the wonderful thing about being a writer.
It is. I actually remember meeting her. I read a ton of Mary Higgins Clark in high school. And I grew up in Pittsburgh, and I live in Cincinnati now, where some of the book is set. But I grew up in Pittsburgh, and there was an event where it was a ticketed event where she was coming to a hotel in downtown Pittsburgh, and you could have, like, dinner with her and then hear her speak and get a book signed. And my mother was a fan, too. So when I expressed an interest, she got us tickets. And so I went as a teenager and had this dinner with Mary Higgins Clark and listened to her talk. And when I went up to get my book signed, she offered some encouragement for me when I expressed that I'd like to be a writer one day. And you never forget that as a younger writer, you know, that somebody who you look up to in that way offers that kind of encouragement. So it was a cool moment.
Well, I'm sure she would be very proud. I don't know if she's gotten this book yet, but she reads a lot. So I know she probably, you know, it's somewhere there in her pile of books, because I know she would love this book, because you have the suspense, you build on the suspense, you throw some curveballs in there, which I love, and it just carries right through the book. It makes it for an absolutely fantastic read.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, so what can I say? We will tell people that it's told from the perspective of three characters, Violet, Finn, and their friend Caitlin. And that's about all I want to say, because the rest people have to just really trust me. You will love this book. It's wonderful.
Well, they're on vacation. The book opens when they're on their, it's this young couple, and they're on their very first family vacation with their young son. And so the mother and the wife, Violet, is having her life is good moment on the beach. She's got her pina colada and her book, and her husband has taken her son up to the room for his nap.
And that's it. That's it. That's all they need to know. I'm telling everybody out there.
And then everything gets turned upside down.
And that's it. And
yeah.
And you weave all these little plot lines in there. Wow. Did you have fun doing that?
It was fun. You know, I love books that are told from multiple points of view.
So do I.
That was something that I was playing with here, where, as you mentioned, I have the three different characters. And but I think a problem that I sometimes have with books told from multiple points of view is if you end up liking one character better than the others, or liking one character's storyline better than the others. And so you end up sort of skimming through the chapters of your least favorite character, trying to hurry up and get to the one that you like. And so when I wrote this book, I really wanted to challenge myself to make sure that the characters were so intermingled, and also the storylines are so intermingled that, you know, there's not a chapter where you're wanting to skim to get back to your favorite character, because everything that's going on relates to all three of them, right?
Well, I think
you
did a great job of telling it from three different points of view. And I think one of the best books recently, an author who did a great job, is Delia Ephron, who did Syracuse. And mm-hmm. she told it from the points of view of four people. And that ability to keep you going so that you want to know, blending into the next story and the next story. It's a real talent.
It's a format that I really like, and it is kind of fun if you – I'm not an outliner, so I kind of tend to write more organically, and sometimes I write stories out of order. So the next scene that is the most vivid in my mind, even if I know it doesn't come next, sometimes I'll go ahead and write that next, especially if I'm feeling stuck. And I think that that method of writing lends itself well to multiple points of view as well.
Now, this, of course, is your first book, and I have to tell everyone that, you know, for people who don't recognize your name because you are new as a novelist, they should know you. Writers should know you because, of course, you are the editor-in-chief of Writer's Digest.
I am.
And yes. Which is, of course, the largest writer's magazine in the world. And I know you publish 8 times a year, right?
We do. We publish 8 times a year, and we also do for subscribers, and then we also do 4 special newsstand-only issues every year. So we've been around a long time. We've been around since 1920, and we were actually founded here in Cincinnati, I think, before publishing was quite so New York-centric. We were a little family-owned company here, and that's where we still are today, even though we do have a New York office. We have executives in a New York office, but all of our editorial and design is here in Cincinnati. And so we really serve all kinds of aspiring writers and working writers, whether they want to be freelance writers or novel writers or write a memoir, any kind of book or any kind of short story writing, any kind of writing that you want to do. We have information on how to do that. And then every issue also has an interview with a best-selling author as a cover story. And one of the best parts of my job is that I've gotten to do a lot of those, too. I guess if you're the editor, you can assign the coolest article to yourself, right? If you want to. So I've had the great fortune in my time here. I've been at the helm of the magazine for about 8 years. Has been that I've had the amazing privilege of being able to interview, as you do, so many authors, but really authors that I've looked up to, you know, my entire life. So
it's so exciting for me. It's been such a thrill in these 2 years that I've spoken to so many of people that I've just idolized for years, and then now I get to talk to them. It's wonderful, isn't it?
It is. It's really, and it's especially when you are aspiring to write yourself and when you're starting out, it's just amazing how warm and encouraging writers are in the writing community, almost without, and I mean, there's exceptions to everything, but almost without exception, there's just so much, you see so many, it's not super competitive, you know, writers get to a point where other people are putting them up on a pedestal, and then they turn around and give the person behind them a hand up, and it's wonderful, and they speak with us and offer, you know, genuine craft and career advice to other writers, generously giving of their time to do that. And it's a wonderful thing to talk to these people whose books you read and who seem so, you know, gosh, I wish I could write something like that one day. And really, they're just people. And a lot of them remember very vividly their years of collecting rejection letters, as we all have.
Yes. So it is true. They are, it's a wonderful community when you get involved with writers. I think it's just, I found them absolutely amazing and very, very giving. One of my favorites, of course, is Larry Block, Lawrence Block, who, of course,
he wrote
fantastic.
A column for us for many years, the fiction writing column.
I know, and he's always so generous and so wonderful and helpful to young writers. Now, of course, I also have to mention Writer's Digest has the most wonderful competition, writers' competitions. Different. You have different types. I know one just ended May 31st was a deadline for one, right?
I think that might have been extended, actually.
Yeah.
I would check. But yes, we offer we have a huge, our brand extends far beyond the magazine. So we do, we have a huge portfolio of writing competitions throughout the year, including, I think, the two that we're about to close right now. One is called the Writer's Digest Annual Writing Competition, and that has 10 categories. So pretty much any kind of writing you do, you could submit. And then we also have one for self-published books that's been going on, and that's just really for achievement in, you know, people who have independently published their own books. We have one for ebooks and one for print books. And then we also have various short story competitions throughout the year. The entry fees are relatively small, usually around, you know, $20, $25, except for the self-published book competition. That one costs a little bit more. But the prizes are amazing. You win a lot of money, and you win a trip to the Writer's Digest Conference in New York City, which is another part of our brand. We have a huge conference in New York City every August. Draws about 1,000 writers, editors, agents. It has a huge pitch event where writers can sit down face-to-face and pitch their ideas with agents. We also have a novel writing conference just for fiction writers that we do in Pasadena, California, and that's going to be this October. And we have, you know, we have online education. We have workshops. We have webinars. We have
Wonderful, wonderful things. But I want to get back now. We'll get back to Almost Missed You, because that is the name of your book, and I want to make sure that no one misses out on this book. Almost Missed You, was that your title originally, or did you have another title when you were working on it?
That was my title when I submitted it. When I was working on it, I was playing with the idea of August, because the book spans several years, but the activities always happen. The drama always occurs in the month of August. So originally I was playing with the idea of Almost and something with August in the title. But then I had some beta readers who gave me some early feedback, and no one was really loving any of those titles I gave them. So we started tossing some ideas back and forth. And the idea of missed connections is pretty prevalent in the book. And I just came up with Almost Miss You at one point, and all my early readers loved it, and I submitted it, and my agent and my editor never discussed changing it.
And we have to talk about your agent.
Which doesn't always happen.
Yeah, I know. And we have to talk about your agent. Your agent is wonderful. You lucked out with a fantastic agent.
I did luck out. Barbara Powell at Irene Goodman Agency. She's the vice president there. She is a wonderful agent.
She's fantastic. She's been on the program several times. She is really one of the favorite of my listeners. They always ask me about Barbara. And, of course, Irene Goodman was my very first guest on my first show.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I have a big connection. And so I was so thrilled to know that it was Barbara who got you a deal. Wow.
Yeah, Barbara's actually my second agent, too. I had an earlier agent, and I had an earlier novel that never sold. It was out on submission, collecting rejections for about a year and a half, and it just never sold. And that agent and I ended up parting ways, and then I wasn't really sure what to do. I had this novel that had been rejected by some publishers, but there were still plenty of places that hadn't been submitted. And then I had this new manuscript for Almost Missed You. And I, you know, you can't really submit two things at once. So I just wasn't too sure what to do. And I ended up approaching Barbara, and she had asked to see both. And she said, and she actually read them both, and she said, I don't think I can sell this first one. It's a quieter story, and I don't think it would be doing you justice, because I think this new manuscript shows a lot of growth in your writing. And it's hard to argue with that. So when I signed on with her, I signed on with her knowing, when I signed with Barbara, I had to let go of the first book, because I knew that she didn't want to shop it. And I trusted her, and I decided I was okay with that. And she managed to sell. She sold Almost Missed You in 2 weeks in a preempt. There were multiple publishers interested. She said she could sell it, and she did.
She did. She has a great eye for talent, and to have her as an agent is just such a wonderful thing.
And she's just a really she's a kind and caring person, too. She doesn't just care about you for your next book. You know, she cares about you as a person.
Well, that's part of Irene's her entire life has been devoted to growing author. She doesn't believe in just the one-offs. She wants to make sure that, you know, her agency always helps an author to grow and to last many, many years, not just a one-off type of thing.
Exactly. You know, and she advises me on things like my, you know, my next manuscript, but we also have conversations about things like work-life balance. You know, I mean, we're both moms. We both have young kids. I just find her advice very sound. And anytime she has something to say, even if it's not what you want to hear, you should definitely listen.
Well, of course, you are well known. I mean, you are editor in chief. You have been an editor for many years, and I know that I think at one point you got a job over like 100 or so or 200 other people trying out for an editing job, right?
Yeah. That's funny. Where did you see that? That is true. Yeah, one time I did.
Well, I hear things. I know things. And so so here you are, a great editor. Did you need an editor for your book?
Well, everybody needs an editor.
Exactly.
Right?
That's what I tell authors. It's so funny. You know, I talk to a lot of, you know, local authors or authors just coming up, and they'll say, well, I've done my book and it's all ready to go and I'm done and they should publish it. And I say, oh, I'm sorry. You don't know yet the fun of working with an editor. Right?
Right. I've written nonfiction before for lots of other venues. I had an essay in the New York Times, Modern Love column a few years back. I've contributed essays in nonfiction pieces. This is my first time, obviously, having my fiction edited. But I think every editor that you work with is it's an amazing learning experience. You know, you learn something different just from having somebody else view your work with an editorial eye, but also view it as closely as you do. You know, I remember being blown away when I got my editorial letter for Almost Missed You from my editor, Holly Ingraham at St. Martin's. And the editor opened, you know, or the letter opened, I've read your book 4 times now, and here are my thoughts. And the idea that someone else would have read your book, you know, I've read my own book. At that point, you're tired of reading your own book, you know. So to have someone else who's been over it so closely and who's gotten to know your characters and understands what you're trying to do so well, to have someone really come in and help you make sure that it's the best it can possibly be is really an amazing experience.
Well, editing is not an easy job because you do have to
No. You
have to really put yourself out there and get into, if you're going to be good at it, you have to really get into the book. And well, she's done a great job of, I think, the editing too, making sure that everything boom, 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 bounces along, you know, whoa, and we can't put the book down. That's what we're always aiming for, right?
Exactly. And just identifying little holes and little things that you don't see when you're so close to something.
Yes, and you want your editor to find them before somebody on Amazon finds them.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. They can be pitiless people. Yeah. I mean, they will find a hole and they will like jump in it and they will, you know, over and over talk about it. So yeah, you want to make sure that it's as perfect as possible.
Yeah. And there was some, it's funny because I've gone to a few, the book's been out for only about 2 months now, a little over 2 months, but I've had the opportunity to go to a couple of book club meetings locally, which has been really fun. To have a chance to sit down and talk with people who've been reading the books and find out how they experienced the story, not just from an Amazon review, but from an in-person, you know, conversation. And there's something in Cincinnati that's a real event that I had taken license with the timeline of it. The event wasn't actually happening yet at the point that it was an annual thing. It wasn't happening yet at the point that was in my story. And little author's note in my acknowledgments, I acknowledged that I had taken license with the timeline, but said that I hoped Cincinnati readers would forgive me. And it was funny talking to these people because so many of them had noticed, like they were reading the book like, aha, no, 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 that's wrong. And then they went back and saw my note, and they were like, oh, okay, she knows.
I know.
She knew she was taking license with that. But, I mean, it's amazing the kinds of things, not just plot holes, but, you know, if you act, even though it's fiction, if you actually get your, you know, facts wrong.
Oh, they catch you.
You're definitely going to hear about it.
I know. They catch you. They, you know, and I've told people, okay, you know, if you find, even in the best edited book, there will be a grammatical error. There will be a misspelling. Don't, you know, obsess on it. You don't have to, like, give somebody one star just because a few words are misspelled. You know, get over it, you know.
Right, right. And it might not be the author's fault.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, it could have been introduced accidentally at the proofreading stage or, you know.
You never know. But it is funny how they catch these things.
Well, at Writer's Digest, we proofread every issue with a certain terror because it's like sending it out to, you know, 100,000 critics. All of our audience being writer, you know, if you were doing a magazine on some other topic, the audience might not be as discerning. But if we have a grammatical error in there, we are going to hear about it from all of our readers.
That's funny. So. Now, you have a new website, right? You have a website.
I do.
Yeah. What is it?
Well, it's not super new, but it's up. It's jessicastrawser.com. My name's spelled with a W. It's S-T-R-A-W-S-E-R.
Like a straw that you need.
Or a strawberry.
And a straw that you need for a pina colada when you're reading
like
this book.
A straw for a pina colada. And like a strawberry that you would garnish
like
your pina colada with.
Oh,
if it
yeah.
was really good.
Oh, that's...
And I'm also on Twitter at Jessica Strawser. And I have a Facebook author page at Jessica Strawser Author.
And, you know, I just want to tell everyone that I think this is a really wonderful read. And I hope that everyone will get Almost Missed You because I don't want anyone to miss it. And Jessica, I want to thank you so much for being on today. You are a delight. The book is wonderful.
Oh.
And as you know, my new contributor, I have a contributor now to Joy on Paper, and she did a book buzz moment for your book, and that we're playing for people because we want to encourage them to get your book.
That was so generous and amazing of her.
Yeah.
And this is a great show. Thanks for having me on, Patsy. Well, thanks for all you do for writers.
Well, thank you. And the minute she got the book, I didn't ask her if she was sipping the pina colada, but she sounded awfully enthusiastic when she did the buzz. So maybe she had a buzz. Because she was really, really up there when she recorded it. So it was really cute. And
Well, now I want one, and I'm at the office. I'm at work right now. So
well, you have to.
We need to have a blender here at Writer's Digest.
Exactly.
I need to get on that.
Fantastic idea. Everybody will really, yeah. And this
if
is
we
what,
do have more typos in a future issue, you'll know what happened.
Okay. Well, Jessica, again, thank you so much for being on my program today.
Thanks,
and
Patsy.
Because you are a joy to talk to, and you've put your joy on paper.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Okay, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we're going to be back, and I have a really exciting writer coming up.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
I stayed up all night reading this book. We can say that on your behalf to media and tastemakers, but it would be silly for you to brag on your own book. When you need a champion in your corner promoting your work, JKS Communications is with you every step of the way. We take care of the details of promoting you and your book so that you can spend your time and energy focusing on what you do best. Radio and TV interviews, newspaper features, book tours, social media, video. You can do it all, and we're here to make it happen. In 12 years, we've helped more than 700 authors and 1,200 books find their fan base. Everyone at JKS Communications loves what we do, and it shows in our enthusiasm. We're going to make a great team with you. Check us out at jkscommunications.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry my pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose.
Mike is offering 50% off his 4-pack special.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 1-800-871-1543 and use the promo code PATSY, and Mike will offer you free shipping. Once again, that's 800-871-1543, promo code PATSY, P-A-T-Z-I. Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with today's Book Buzz. If you are looking for a mystery that you won't be able to put down, then I have just the book for you, Almost Missed You. Every once in a while, you come across a debut novel that blows you away, and this one by Jessica Strausser is just that. It's the kind of book that has so many layers and depth that it will leave you wondering what is around the corner. It's an amazing thriller, and here is the buzz. As Violet sips a piña colada on the beach, she has no idea that her life is about to change. She will learn something about her life and those around her. All the pieces come together like a puzzle. Violet will need to face the fact that you really, really never know everything about a person, and some decisions have deadly consequences. It's a powerful story of secrets and lies. You will love Almost Missed You by Jessica Strausser. It's a hold-no-barred thriller that you won't be able to put down. Get it online today and enjoy. This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper. For more of my suggestions on mysteries you should not miss, click on Book Buzz with Rita Moreau. Buzzing off for now.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Who is on a major, major tour of America, practically, with her new book, Courtney Mom, who has just come out with a fantastic new book called Touch. Hi, Courtney, are you there?
I am there. I am there.
You
I'm
are
here.
There.
I'm everywhere.
You're everywhere. That's it.
I have been traveling a lot, yes, so I'm here, there, and everywhere.
Wow.
But happy to be here with you.
Well, thank you so much. I think you're on a 21... city tour, which is fantastic. They have really pulled out all the stops for this book because
they're just so wonderful. They're so wonderful. The pleasure has just been great.
Oh, you are so, they are absolutely wonderful. What they've done for you because, well, of course, what you've done for them because Touch is a big, big, big success. It is. Wow. I'm reading this book and I'm going, oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. Wow. I kept saying to myself, whoa, who's writing like this? Who's writing like it is?
Oh, really?
It is.
So nice to hear.
What, you are so good. I mean, really, really good.
Thank you.
The book, of course, is called Touch. And it is about a trend forecaster. And, of course, as I'm reading it, I'm saying she has to be a trend forecaster. I didn't know anything about you. I said, well, nobody could write this without being a trend forecaster because it's so right on and it's so good. I just, wow. This is amazing.
Thank you. It feels amazing.
Well, you know, of course, it is a book about, well, you tell us a little bit. You tell us as much as you want about it. Because
sure, I would love to. Touch is a novel about a very famous Trent forecaster named Sloane Jacobson, who is, she's been based in Paris for about 15 years, but she gets sort of the gig of a lifetime and is invited to consult for the world's largest tech company called Mammoth, and Mammoth is based in New York. So she's flown over there, and she brings along her life partner, Roman, a French fellow, to consult for 6 months on what the next big trends in technology are going to be. The problem is that while she's there, she starts to get these feelings, these tingling, you know, predictions that the next big thing in technology is actually going to be touch and in-personism and face-to-face interactions.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, how awful. I mean, really, are we going to have to give up all these electronic gadgets?
Well, we're not, you know, I mean, the book explores this, you know, and it sort of posits two different teams, Team Tech and Team Touch. So you can find your way into the book whether or not you're super pro technology and especially smart technology and everything that your phone can do for you. And you can find your way in if you're just tired of people, you know, swiping away on their devices. So hopefully everyone can find it enjoyable.
Oh, everyone will find it enjoyable, and you know, it's I love that your writing is sophisticated but very very touchable. I mean, one really feels that one is in touch with the character, and I think you've done a wonderful job of telling this story.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I have to say, it wasn't easy. I mean, I hear from people and they say that it's very easy to read, which always completely bowls me over because it was very hard to write. Because the thing about writing from the point of view of a trend forecaster is that, in theory, you know, if someone's as good as Sloane Jacobson is supposed to be, she knows everything right away. So the first many, many drafts of this book involved a character who knew everything about everything by chapter one, which unfortunately left the reader with nothing to discover. So it took me a very long time to craft a character who came to her realizations more slowly than she actually would in real life.
Wow. Are you like Sloane?
Well, I mean, I agree with many of her predictions in the novel, but I'm not Sloane. I mean, first of all, I'm not a world famous trend forecaster. And when I worked in trend forecasting, I was, you know, small potatoes, the person behind the curtain who was doing all the work and research for someone way more important who went out and presented my findings, which was totally fine with me, by the way. But she's you know, at the beginning of this novel, is someone who, first of all, is very anti-children. I have a small daughter myself, so I'm not anti-children. she is in a completely loveless relationship. I'm very happy to have a supportive husband, and she's incredibly estranged from her family. You know, it's been 15 years, and she's lived on the same continent as them. It's been 4 years since she has even seen them. And I see my family a lot more than that, even though they're all far away. Actually, my family, they all live plane rides away. But, you know, I dedicated this book to my babysitters because they really stepped up to the plate and came and helped out with my toddler so that I could write this book. So I'm not very similar to her, actually.
Well, that's probably a good thing. But she makes for an interesting character and somebody who we really – well, actually, you know – we really get involved in her life. We really want everything to go well for her. And we're hoping that she sort of weaves her way through all of these problems that she's facing with her new boss, who is in himself a character. And this pseudo-husband of hers, the French guy. You know, we'll talk about this French guy. Very.
So Roman... Yeah, Roman, her. I like that pseudo husband. I hadn't thought of a clever way, because in France, a lot of people don't get married. They get what's called paxed, which is like a domestic partnership, but it's really recognized by the country and the different states, and you can, you know, get health insurance and tax deductions, and you don't have to be married. So a lot of people aren't. So I do struggle with what I should call him, but I like pseudo husband, so I'm going to steal that.
Good.
But he, so Roman Bayard is a, he's dubbed himself a neo-sensualist, which means he lectures about touch in the digital age and sensuality in the digital age. And he has convinced himself and is starting to convince others that partly in because of overpopulation, actual penetrative sex is just not
passé.
Cool,
passé. Passé, as they would say in French. Forget it.
Right. It's the way you say passé, dépassé. So it's not cool, and it's also not necessary. The world is overpopulated as it is, and so the real kind of uncharted territory for sensuality lies in virtual reality and cyber sexuality. And so he sort of just declared himself, you know, he's declared the end of sex, which is problematic when you're in a, you know, love relationship with him. So it leaves our poor Sloan in quite a conundrum.
It does. And it's funny. The result is funny. This character is, he's a character. I can tell you, you've written him well.
So, thank you.
And I don't know, do we want to tell people what he wears? I don't know if we want to.
Sure. I mean, it comes up right away in the first chapter. So Roman has taken to wearing something called a Zentai suit, which is like a full body stocking, which it started off as a Japanese fetish wear, but it's sort of become like a lifestyle movement. Now, this is not a widespread trend. This is very, very niche, but full body stocking, you get into it, and you can see the outline of a person's body, but you can't see any actual part of them, and you cannot access their skin anywhere. So he gives lectures in this outfit, and it's supposed to be a way of...
It's so funny.
It's supposed to be a way of...
It's so funny. I love those scenes. I think it's so funny. People have to read this book. It's just, you know, the book is witty, it's sophisticated. You use new words that people don't know, which I love. Your prose is, it flows just woo, woo, woo. It carries right through the book. And yet it's very, the interpersonal relationship with her family is intriguing, and the entire, well, I won't give it away, but I was happy with the ending. I mean,
I'm glad. Endings are tough. They leave a lot of,
I was, this is where I wanted it to go, and I was so happy.
Oh, good.
This is why I kept saying, she better end this book, right?
Good.
Yeah, because it is wonderful, and of course, the title is Touch. I'm telling everybody, it's Touch, and that's important for people to remember. And I think that, you know, for you, it must be a thrill that you've gotten this kind of reception for your book, because people are raving about it, I tell you.
Yeah, we've been very fortunate to get a lot of reviews. I mean, it's only been out a week, so I'm purposely protecting myself from any access to kind of sales information, because I'm still on tour, and I really don't want to be thinking about that. I want to be celebrating the release and talking to readers. So I have no idea if it's selling or not, but it's wonderful to hear that people are enthusiastic about it, and we've had just great reviews. So, you know, that nothing better than that. It feels great.
Well, I think it's, I have a feeling it's out there doing very, very well, because it's just it's just the kind of book that I think everybody is interested in technology, and whether we like it or not, and whether we should like it or not. And so I think it's I think it's just a very timely book. And of course, one we have to mention, Anastasia.
Yes, of course. So you know, the irony is that Sloan is paid to predict connections and the way that people will connect with one another, but she herself, as we talked about, is completely disconnected in her own life from her family and from her friends. So for most of the book, her closest friend is actually her driverless car, Anastasia, who is a product put out by the company that she works for, And it's outfitted with, you know, it has thermal sensors in the seats and massaging seat backs and a coffee maker. And it's just a person, it's a piece of technology in the story who really, really takes care of her. And it's also my way of signaling to the tech community that I think there is a lot of wonderful things about technology and the way that technology can help us live better lives. So she's a little bit of a compromise between the two teams, Team Tech and Team Touch.
And now, have you ever been in a driverless car? Have you?
I haven't. No, I haven't. And, I've never put on a Zentai suit either. So hopefully by the end of the book tour, I will have accomplished one of these things.
I would try for the driverless car if I were you.
Yeah, first. Or I guess I could wear a Zentai suit in the driverless car and accomplish both at the same time.
Oh, wow. Now we've just made a big hit here. Your publisher has to do this. They have to.
Yeah.
They have to
we'll
do
get
this.
Get on it.
They get you right on, to all the morning shows.
Oh, that's a good, yeah.
Okay. Here we have the best publicity in the world.
I know, we've got it.
We've got it. You jump into that suit and into the back of a driverless car and let them drive you to all of the studios, all the morning talk shows. You're going to be a big hit.
We'll see what I look like in a Zentai suit. I mean, I don't know. That's a pretty form-fitting outfit, but I like this idea. I'm going to take it back to them.
Well, no, I'm serious. This would be wonderful, but make sure that they carry a poster of you so that people can see what you actually look like because, you're so,
right, otherwise,
you're so pretty and it would be terrible that people will walk away and say, oh my gosh, is she in this?
Yes. Who is this crazy person?
Yeah.
Right.
Especially if you wear the gold one, it's like you're an Oscar walking around.
You look dipped in something.
Yeah. But I think it would be absolutely perfect.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. It's a really good idea.
So now we have the next publicity campaign. After you finish this whirlwind tour, I mean, they are taking you everywhere.
This week I'm doing two cities a day, I think. I'm on the two city a day part of the tour. So it's intense for sure, but very exciting.
Well, as a matter of fact, you could. Is your husband along with you?
Oh gosh, no.
You could put him in the Zentai suit.
Oh,
and he could join you, huh?
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. No.
And they could pay.
I will talk to him about that.
They could pay for him to do that, so he could make money while And I think it'd be wonderful.
You're very good at this. Yeah.
I think that would be wonderful.
I agree with you.
I have all these great ideas. So, because I'm always helping to promote authors, and I'm so happy that I can promote Touch. I think it's a wonderful book, and you have a website that people can go to.
Yes, it's CourtneyMom.com, and mom is MAUM. And all the, I've got all my tour events up there, and I've got a bunch of different, selected pieces of writing and short stories and essays and humor pieces and the press for the book and all sorts of fun stuff like that is up there.
And, of course, now, did you have an agent already when you wrote this second book? This is your second book, right?
Yes, I did.
So.
I've had the same agent for both the first and the second book, Rebecca Gradinger. She's amazing at Fletcher & Company.
Well, she must be very happy right now because I think she has a big hit on her hands. And I think you've done a great job with the book. As I said, it's so readable. It flows.
Oh, that's the best thing that someone could hear.
Really. When you get a book like yours and you think, wow, am I going to be, it's. You start off and it gets so exciting I'm sure that everyone is really enjoying it once they get it. So I want to thank you so much, Courtney, for being on Joy on Paper today. I know that.
Well, thank you. Thank you for your enthusiasm.
Well, it's just wonderful when a book comes along that touches you. And what's better than a book called Touch?
Right.
A great title. And what do you predict? Do you have a prediction for the future? A trend? What's the next big thing?
Well, I'll give you a small one. I'm not, because the book talks about the big trends that I agree with. So I'll just give you a fun small one. I think that we're going to see handwriting classes start taking place, probably in independent bookstores where people go and learn cursive again.
Oh, that's wonderful! I love it. I love cursive. I have the most beautiful signature. Cursive signature.
I don't doubt that. Listening to your voice, I can imagine.
Oh, my signature is so beautiful. And I just love cursive. So that's a wonderful idea. I think so.
Yeah, we'll see.
Okay. Well, thank you again, Courtney Mom, for joining us today on Joy on Paper. Bye now.
Bye.
Okay. Wow. She's nice. I like her. The book is, wow. You know, when you get this book and you start reading it, you think, how does she know these things? And all of the scenes, one after another, she just layers it and layers it with one exciting scene after another. And I think everybody will like this book. So I'm very impressed with her writing. Very impressed. It's very, I think on a much more sophisticated level than a lot of writing that's going on, because she's, I don't know, I did not ask her where she went to college, but she uses a lot of nice words in there that we don't see every day. We know them, but we don't see them used every day in a book. And so it's so wonderful when somebody can write so easily and make you feel like you're really part of a story. And I think it's very amusing. Besides the fact that, wow, she's going to, I think, have a bestseller here. I predict that. I don't know what is. She said it just came out, but it's going to be on the New York Times best-selling list. So I hope that everyone will get that book. And meanwhile, I want to thank again Rita Moreau, who has joined us as a contributor on Joy on Paper. She's going to be coming out with more. Next week we'll have two more of her wonderful reviews. And again, her name is Rita Moreau, and you can find her on Joy on Paper website. It's www.radio-joyonpaper.com, and you will have there the book club page where you can buy all of the books that I mentioned on this program, and you can also go to Rita's page and listen to her reviews. And at the same time, we have also the Book Buzz page with Robert Tannenbaum, and he is reviewing all of the books that he feels are essential, especially books in the legal field and in American history. So all of those are available on the web page. And remember, if you have an author that you want me to invite on the program, just send me an email at patsy.radio@gmail.com, and I will invite them. And if you want, you can call in on the day that they're here and tell your favorite author why you wanted them to be on the program. And if you have any questions about their work, you can do it in person. So you can help me interview famous writers. All I need is an email from you at patsy.radio@gmail.com. And again, I want to thank everybody for listening today. Remember, one of the joys of life is to see your work on paper, or to hear them spoken on stage or screen or in an audible book. So take time this weekend to read and to write and to dream. And meanwhile, remember to say something nice to somebody today, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed, for everything. And this is Patsy with a Z, hoping that you'll have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. Bye.